Hey, everybody. Good morning. You're listening to KCAW Sitka. This is Talk of Southeast Alaska, a call-in radio show for you, our listeners. I'm your host, Becky Myers. To join in on our conversation, call 747-5877. Our producer, Peter Vu, is here to answer your calls. All right, everybody, good morning. Today, our focus is on the roadless rule in Alaska. We will be discussing what the roadless rule is and the impacts it will have on Southeast communities, where the rulemaking is in the process, and how listeners could still get involved. We will be taking calls throughout this conversation, so make sure to take down this number, 747-5877. Call in with your questions and comments. The roadless rule has many complexities that we will work to break down for our listeners and discuss in the next hour. Today, we have a few guests, and I am here to welcome Linda Benkin from the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association. ALFA was one of the commenting agencies on the roadless rulemaking in the past year. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Becky.
Hey, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, would you start by telling us a little bit more about ALFA and what y'all do?
Sure. ALFA is a organization of commercial fishermen based here in Sitka, Alaska. Our members participate in the longline fisheries, but also we have members who troll for salmon, gillnet, seine for salmon, as well as crab, shrimp, cover most of the whole spectrum. And our mission is to promote sustainable fisheries and healthy small-scale fisheries, thriving fishing communities.
Excellent. Would you explain for listeners what the roadless rule is?
The roadless rule was written to protect and keep intact large unroaded areas on national forests, one of them being the Tungus, in recognition that those unroaded areas are very important to salmon habitat and values of the forest that require large areas in the sort of healthy, untracked state. So producing salmon for recreational, commercial, and sport fisheries, for recreation in the forest, for subsistence gathering, all those uses of the forest.
So then the roadless rule, as I understand it, it's applied here to the Tungus, and that rulemaking was made a few years ago. But this is also a principle that is applied to other wild places in the United States, correct?
Yes, the roadless rule was put in place in 2001. It prohibits road construction, reconstruction, timber harvest in the inventoried roadless areas. It covers about a third of the national forests, including the Tungus National Forest in Southeast. And I guess, as I said, it protects the relatively undisturbed landscapes from damage of new roads, from clear cuts and intact forests, protects wildlife species, fish habitats, scenery, forests, for the benefits of fishing for recreation.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that there are other attributes to the roadless rule at this time? It's the lack of development of roads within the Tungus for development of industry. Anything else that we need to know about what it actually is? Because I know that some of the terminology is confusing to, you know, folks like me who might be a layperson in this.
I guess I'm not quite understanding your question. Be missing something.
No, I think I might be missing something, and that might be coffee. But actually, let's move on. What is ALFA's position on the roadless rule then?
So we supported the no action alternative, which is the alternative that would keep in place the roadless rule protections for the Tungus. And we supported that in recognition of a wide array of scientific studies that showed how important these unroaded areas are to maintaining healthy fish stocks, and that nothing is more of a threat to fisheries and healthy salmon habitat than road building in these relatively uncracked areas. Road building fragments habitat. There's a tendency to increase sedimentation. Most places, even though buffers are left along streams, we see blowdowns, rising temperatures in those streams. And, for example, during the heat wave years, temperatures in streams reached 80 degrees. Mm-hmm. And some of the prime salmon habitat on southern Prince of Wales, which is too hot for salmon to spawn successfully. So our concern is maintaining the sustainability of the Southeast ecosystem, which and Southeast communities, which depend on fisheries, depend on tourism, recreational uses of the forest, mm-hmm. which can be maintained and continued year after year, provided we take care of the forest and the salmon habitat.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the place where the rulemaking is in the process, what prompted the roadless rule to be reexamined at this point?
Actually, it was a petition from the state of Alaska, from our governor, who was looking for the roadless rule to be reconsidered.
Mm. When did he file that petition? It was early last year, or was it in 2018?
I believe it was early last year that, and led to some conversations with our congressional delegation, and then a review of the roadless rule.
I see. So I've heard that there may be proposed alternatives to the roadless rule. You mentioned the no action alternative. Can you tell us a little bit more about other alternatives that had been put into the discussion?
There were some other alternatives included between complete rollback and retaining the roadless rule. They looked at ways to, probably the one that had received some support over the years was protecting some watersheds that were touted as the important fish-producing streams. We didn't support those because most of the streams that are of highest value to the commercial fisheries, coho, pink salmon streams are not protected under those alternatives. Actually, 40% of the streams that are really most important were not protected. Most of those areas, those streams that are the big primary salmon producers as designated by Fish and Game, mm-hmm. are on Prince of Wales Island or other southeast Alaska regions, and those were slated under these compromise alternatives mm-hmm. for additional timber harvest. And we've already seen almost a halving of the pinks available to the commercial harvest, with the biggest drop from those streams in southern southeast Alaska, and really tied to loss of habitat and impacts the habitat in that area. So mm-hmm. none of the other alternatives provided the protection for the fisheries that are so essential to the economy of Southeast Alaska. So that's why the only one we supported was the no action alternative, or alternative one.
Mm-hmm. I've heard the term the plan, the Tongass Land and Resource Management Plan, and in association with discussions around compromises and alternatives. Does that plan factor into any? What is that plan, and how does it impact the fisheries that are at risk?
So the Tongass Land and Resource Management Plan is the Forest Service guidance document on how to manage the 16.7 million acres of federal land, which comprise 80% of Southeast Alaska. The roadless rule protects over 9 million acres from clear-cutting and timber road construction. So while the forest plan covers a range of resource uses, its primary function was to set old-growth and second-growth timber volume targets for the two companies that are still doing industrial-scale clear-cut logging in Southeast. Mm-hmm. So that plan would still be in place. It was the roadless rule part of it that protected these certain areas that would be rolled back.
Okay, thank you for the clarification around that. So where are we right now with the Alaska roadless rulemaking process? I know that there was a public comment period in which ALFA was really involved. What's happening now? What's the update?
So the comment period is closed. There was a request from a number of organizations in Southeast for a delay or an extended comment period, particularly once this pandemic hit. People just felt there wasn't opportunity anymore for the kind of input to our delegation, to our governor, that was needed to really communicate the full range of impacts from rolling back the roadless rule, but that request was ignored. I never saw any kind of response to that request. So at this point, there's no open comment period. I think there's always benefit to people who care about the Tungus and the roadless rule to communicate their concerns about changes in land management practices here to our congressional delegation and to our governor. Mm-hmm. But at this point, really, there will be a decision. Depending on what that decision is, there's likely to be litigation to question whether the process has been adequately followed and whether the full range of impacts have been adequately assessed in the environmental impact statement that is the decision-making document for this action.
And the environmental statement that you were speaking of, that's known as the FEIS, is that correct?
Yeah, that's the final environmental impact statement is what that stands for.
Yeah. So has that been released yet? Is there any update on that at all?
Yes. So we've had an opportunity to review the draft environmental impact statements, provide comments on that.
And that's basically it right now. In terms of where we are in the rulemaking process, then the entity that is making that decision is who?
Well, the Forest Service is the decision maker.
Mm-hmm. And the secretary, what's his name? It's
Secretary of Agriculture, yes.
Yes, Perdue, I believe. Secretary Perdue?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I think we put together these questions a little earlier, and I think we were curious about what is the Forest Service seeming to lean towards when it comes to the rulemaking here? Is there any indication about that on your end?
Well, I think there was years of engagement with the Forest Service prior to this petition to reconsider the roadless rule, and there was growing support within the Forest Service, at least our sense was, to really recognize changing values in Southeast Alaska relative to uses of the forest, and growing support for protecting fish habitat, protecting the recreational values. But I think with the pressure that's been brought to bear on the Forest Service, our concern is it may be leaning towards the Alternative 6 complete exemption. We hope not, but that's our concern.
Okay. All right. And do you know if there's any presumed timeline that has been published around this, when the rulemaking may be done? I know for our end of things, we work with the FCC, and they typically have a docket that we can anticipate rulemaking to be announced during. And so I didn't know if the USDA and Forest Service had anything like that.
The expectation is that that rulemaking will be out soon. Certainly the pandemic has diverted everybody.
Right.
And so I think we still anticipate it to be out relatively soon, but there may be some unexpected delays.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. So you had mentioned that the commenting, the public commenting period is complete. Is there any other way that folks can engage in the rulemaking process? If there is, how would they be able to do that?
People can always share their opinions, comments, concerns with our congressional delegation and the governor through online portals that allow comment, through communicating with staff, mm-hmm. through our delegation, through letters to the editor, through any of the channels that can be used for decision makers to be kept aware of how the public is feeling about mm-hmm. an action that has this much effect on the people who live here in Southeast Alaska, visit Southeast Alaska, or value this forest.
Excellent. Anything else to add for our listeners, Linda?
Oh, I think that's I've covered a fair bit.
You have.
I think that's good.
Oh, that's okay. Thank you so much for joining us today and explaining what the roadless rule is and its impacts, the concerns Alpha has, and where we are in the process.
You bet. Well, thank you for hosting the show and keeping people informed of this major action.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
You too.
Thank you so much for joining us, Linda. We are a call-in talk show, so if you have any comments or questions that you'd like to add to the discussion, please call us at 747-5877. That number again, 747-5877. We have another guest here on the show, and I am pleased to introduce him if I can figure out how to computer. I'm sure I can computer. There we go. I thought so. I'm going to try to unmute him. I'm going to go to a music break real quick. This is a track by Willie Nelson entitled Changing Skies.
There's a bird in the sky, flying high, flying high, to a place from a place.
Okay, how's that?
Sky. That sounds like you're there.
Okay, glad I could help.
Oh, great. Yes, we figured it out. Computers, they can be used. It's true. Hey, so I'm here to announce. I'd like to welcome Robert Venables to the show now. Robert is the executive director for the Southeast Conference and has been involved with the input process around the roadless rule for quite some time. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning.
Would you tell us a little bit more about the Southeast Conference and what y'all do?
Well, Southeast Conference has been around for quite some time. 1958 is actually when we were established by the regional leaders across Southeast Alaska. And, the primary purpose for our, incorporation at that time was to advocate for the ferry system, which would take up another hour of your show if we got into the intricacies of what's going on there. Mm-hmm. But, I think, after getting that up and going, we really took a look at, trying to really see what the issues of the day were at that time and continue to be. And so, what we do is really we take a look holistically at the region and, what are the priorities that we need to work on. Of course, transportation is always the big thing. But energy has been another one, and those have been the two core projects that I've been working on myself. But all the economic sectors, including natural resources, have been, a priority of some level for Southeast Conference in the region. And really, we bring planning and technical assistance to the region, assist policy leaders, program developers, project proponents to kind of take a look at, the information they need to make the decisions of the day.
I see. Well, what would you say is Southeast Conference's position on the roadless rule?
Well, the roadless rule, we were a big supporter of this initiative to find a specific application for Alaska. And I want to, maybe clarify the question you asked the caller earlier. Mm-hmm. This had nothing to do with Governor Dunleavy. This was something that Governor Walker petitioned back in early, I think it was like January or February of 2018. Mm-hmm. They kicked the process off to find a solution for the Tongass that was not a winner take all or loser lose all scenario. What could be found in the in between those bookends that seemed to only lead to litigation or fundraising or whatever the core goal was, to stir up the issues that were seemed to be so divisive. And so Southeast Conference has been very much a part of that and been a big supporter of trying to find some alternative to the winner or lose all.
Mm-hmm. So I know that there have been a number of different proposals put out. Linda talked about a few of them. And I know that Southeast Conference was a part of the cooperating agencies in the comment period and in this Governor Walker instituted look at what alternatives might look like. Is that right?
Well, actually, we are not one of the cooperating agencies.
Okay.
We were very much one of the committee members. So what the governor did was he established a citizens advisory committee, mm-hmm. and there was 13 members on there. There was a very diverse group that included tribes, the Alaska Native corporations, fishing, timber, conservation, tourism, utilities, mining, transportation, and I was on there for local governments and communities. And so we also, the group was chaired by the Division of Forestry's chief forester there. And so that was the working group that kind of worked at trying to find really what the issues were without getting into the real divisive bookends. So we didn't even talk about what it meant to be totally removed or totally embracing of the roadless rule. We looked at, what could be done in between there that was, kind of some of the guiding principles that we had was, we wanted to find a pragmatic solution that had some flexibility to it, but yet was very durable and sustainable, that could, stand the test of time and really balance the need of protection and access, because they're both very, very valid points. Mm-hmm. And really take a look at what the communities needed for economic development, and yet what was affordable or economically feasible. And I think really keeping in mind that the Tongass was designed and set up to be a multi-use force, and trying to find a way that we could get away from the really politicized division that this topic continues to bring up.
Mm-hmm. So you spoke a little bit about the intended purpose of the Citizen Advisory Committee and who was on it. What ended up being the result of that committee? What did you find?
Well, we found out that there are a range of options that could better reflect the needs that Alaskans have. We have to keep in mind it is national forest, so there's national interests as well. But, we want to really reflect what those needs were. And so we provided recommendations for a list of exceptions and a graduated set of what would be Alaska specific roadless rule that kind of could somewhere pick between a gradient that was close to the no action that then worked its way up to something that was close to a full exemption. And so the thinking was that somewhere in between there might be a sweet spot that you could land on and find a little better perspective. Because one of the key issues with this roadless rule is that there are many parts of it that are ambiguous. You've got long distance, cookie cutter management that is really still very subjective to the politics of the time. And so trying to find some better certainty that would respect the needs of the locals, community, the region as a whole, and still fall within the intent of the national rule, which actually we should talk about it too in a moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and that was my understanding is the roadless rule. It is applied to the Tongass for sure. And that's what is of concern for local groups and communities, but also that the roadless rule applies to national parks and wilderness areas throughout the United States, correct?
Well, so yeah, that's a really interesting thing. If you take a look at the history, Alaska was doing roadless way before roadless rule was instituted. And I think Alaska was really the blueprint for the national rule, because that's what this really is called, is the national rule. Mm-hmm. So, Congress had already on at least two different occasions come in and done set-asides and management of the Tongass to make sure that these really pristine areas that had unique characteristics were not open to any development. And then somebody looked around the rest of the 49 states and says, we don't have this kind of a national rule, and we should, because the lower 48 is so developed that they were finding these these intersecting roads and development that fragmented the forest. So mm-hmm. Congress then developed this national rule after what was being done to Alaska, and with the express statement that Congress did not intend it to be applied to Alaska. And so it was only 8 days before the Clinton administration left office that this rule was then imposed on Alaska. So it wasn't a lot of due process at that point. But nonetheless, that's been the issue of the day. Curiously, when the national rules applied in the other states, the average forest set aside in each state is somewhere in that 30-35% range, I'm told. Mm-hmm. And I think even at this point, with all the set-asides, we're much closer to 90%, here in the Tongass. So I think some perspective and balance. Nobody wants to clear-cut the entire Tongass. And I think it's not really a valid fear that roads will be built to nowhere or anywhere. We have a heck of a time trying to get DOT to build a road anywhere, and I think it's expensive. But I think you mentioned just a minute ago the whole concept of plan, and I think that's really the core issue. Is there needs to be a plan in the Tongass that has sustainability built into it, and if it takes 150 years to grow a tree to the characteristics that they call old growth, well, then they need to find out what the appropriate footprint for a renewable forest is and divide that by 150 years, and then you've got that. Mm-hmm. So your entire Tongass is not at risk.
That brings up a really interesting thought for me, especially around the idea around harvesting old growth and given the time it takes to develop that resource or to grow a old growth tree, which is 150 years. Do you have any indication that the environmental safeguards that folks have been talking about around, forest resources, are there any that you can see that are in place when perhaps the rulemaking is made that might assuage people's fears around it? I mean, you mentioned the plan, and I assume that's the land management plan that we were talking about earlier with Linda. But if the roadless rule is exempted, which means that we would be then open for roads to be built within the Tongass, right? Then what are the safeguards that might be in place?
Well, if the roadless rule goes away, the Tongass is not open for road making. Mm-hmm. The Tongass Land Management Plan would still be the governing set of rules. But even if that were to be modified, the vast majority of the Tongass is still set aside to where there will never be roads there. So that was one of the issues during the public comment period that I thought was unfortunate, is that there was a lot of misinformation that was put out there that, I think did not do the process very good service, because we want to find that balance. And so, there's not going to be road making in many, many of these areas. And we need to find out which of the areas there should never be road making and what is a suitable, sustainable plan for, you know, for what really matters in southern southeast, where Prince of Wales Island, you know, there is timber industry there that is a very valuable and viable industry. Would that look the same in other parts of the Tongass? No, and it should not. So that's really what we're looking for is, you know, more of a collective, well thought out, long term plan that has some sustainability to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you had mentioned, I suppose, the scope. Like, what would you say is the geographic scope of the impacts of an exemption to the roadless rule? You mentioned it's a majority not, but.
Yeah, well, you know, there's some debate over that. And I think that's where I want to keep going back to the Forest Service to get them to have the resources and the tools to plan that out better, because there is, you know, their budgets have been slashed, their personnel has been cut. They're, you know, they've got national constraints with forest fires elsewhere, and there's just so many pulls at them that we don't have all the data that I think is necessary to make those kind of decisions. But I think back in a number of years ago, the Forest Service had projected that, like, there's only 17,000 acres of old growth that would be even harvested in these areas in the next 100 years. So there's not, I think that figure might be as high as 185,000, but there's just not that much timber. I think one always has to pause when they say old growth, second growth, because, you know, this, whatever you're pointing to as an old growth tree is a second growth to something, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of finding the perspective. And if it's, you know, the 150 year cycle, then let's find a spot where forest management and timber harvest activities make sense and confine it to that. And then, you know, have the set asides we need for other industries, for tribal or community use, and just respect those boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been talking a lot about trees, and that's a big part of it, because that's the most sort of visible thing. But what's the scale of the restricted use categories that are right now covered by the roadless rule, because there are other industries that are impacted here, correct?
Well, really, that's the whole issue. In my mind, I have never been out there advocating, you know, the timber industry line of we need X amount of board feet or whatever. They articulate what their needs are, et cetera. Where I've come up across the most conflict with the roadless rule has been with energy development. I've heard stories about, you know, the mining development, but, you know, really, I think, you know, there's just a lot of areas where the inflexible national rule does not allow for the kind of flexibility and common sense approach that really it should have in the Tongass. And so that's why we're looking for the compromise.
Mm-hmm. So let's bring it home before we part ways. For somebody who's a resident in Southeast Alaska, what do you think they will see as a result of whatever, like, let's say that the rulemaking turns out to be that the secretary of the USDA decides that there's a total exemption from the roadless rule for the Tongass? What do you think a regular person living their life in Southeast Alaska might see?
I'd be surprised if they see anything different.
Mm. Okay.
I mean, at least not in the first few years. I think the fear that, you know, that could be out there is that long term, maybe something happens. But, I mean, the Forest Service has got lands within their timber base that they've been trying to get out. And that is very problematic. I don't, you know, the whole Tongass Land Management Plan would have to be revised. That's a multi-year process. Mm-hmm. And then, so, you know, there's nothing that goes quickly at the speed of government.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't think that, and that's why I want to really diffuse the whole fear element. You know, if whatever the Forest Service puts out there is not perfect, and since it's government, it won't be, you know, there's time for folks to get engaged, and especially when it comes down to any revisions of the Tongass Land Management Plan, and, you know, make it better.
Mm-hmm. I had one more question around that. I know that right now, especially, you know, you've given the idea that, you know, everything's been slowed down by the pandemic in government especially. We did reach out to the U.S. Forest Service to give comment, and we still haven't gotten a response. But, you know, one thing that people are seeing specifically that is truly impacted is tourism. And I know that that was an industry that folks had some concern around when it came to exemption of the roadless rule. How do you see tourism being impacted by this exemption?
Well, there's a number of things within that statement. Number one, I'm not sure what has slowed down other than the economy. My life has been much busier during this pandemic, just with the outreach and just conversations and meetings. So,
oh, yeah. Same.
You know, there's, if anything, there's more time for contemplation and planning, I suppose. But, you know, tourism, I think that's a very, very valid set of issues. Of course, number one, I think tourism is going to be turned back probably at least a decade. So, you know, the needs of tourism last year projected forward are not going to be the new reality. But it gives us a glimpse of where it could go in the future, which then takes out some of the angst and hurriedness, perhaps, that we have to react. And maybe we can infuse that into some good planning. When we had the Citizens Advisory Committee working, we try to tackle, you know, some of the specifics on where is tourism really going? What are their needs? And really, that is something the Forest Service could not answer. And so I think that given some time now that they can better plot and understand what the needs are. And I think predominantly those are more in the northern Tongass than they are in southern Tongass. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's why an Alaska-specific rule would allow specific rulemaking where you could do set-asides, or you could do, you know, the management of the Tongass as the communities and sub-regions within the Tongass really need it.
Excellent. Well, is there anything else you'd like to add in this discussion? It sounds like right now that we are still awaiting, you know, information around the rulemaking done by the Secretary of the USDA. But anything else that you'd like to add?
No, I think that, you know, Southeast Conference is always, you know, going to, you know, prioritize, you know, what the communities need and really kind of make sure that a good conversation is happening. We don't pick and choose decisions, you know, but we want to make sure everybody has a seat at the table. And that's why, you know, we've advocated, you know, strongly for each of these sectors and communities and the tribes to have a say of what, especially when the lands are close to their home. Because I think that they've been here on this land for, you know, thousands of years. And this place does have very, very, very special cultural, spiritual significance. And we need to respect and honor that and find a way to specifically meet their needs. So that's why I think, you know, good planning and good collaboration is most important.
Excellent. Well, we do have a caller on the line. I believe he has a question. This is George from Sitka, if we did it right. George, are you there?
Yes, I am. Actually, it isn't more a question. It's more a statement that I believe, you know, the roadless rule needs to be completely eliminated. They need to open up our forests so that we can get jobs and economy back in this part of the state, especially after everything that's happened. You know, I think it was laughable and jokeable that they're saying 270,000 Southeasterners commented to no action rule. So anyway, that's my comment.
Okay, thank you. No problem. Thanks, George. Yeah, I thought that was a question, but thank you for your comment, George. Yeah, so we appreciate that there's an ongoing discussion, at least here, and that in at least the past, the Forest Service has been in discussions with the Citizens Advisory Committee and other people giving comment on the roadless rule, and hopefully they will continue that. We did try to get in touch with them, but unfortunately they were unable to get in touch with us to sit and talk about the roadless rule today. But we appreciate you, Robert.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So you're listening to Talk of Southeast Alaska, a call-in radio show for our communities that are listening, not just in Sitka, but other places throughout Southeast Alaska. Please give us a call with your comments and questions. Our phone number here is 747-5877. Again, that number is 747-5877. In the meantime, I'm going to be giving you a little musical interlude. Right now, I have Johnny Cash and June Carter Cash with the track The Pine Tree.
I leaned my back against you, thinking you were an oak. I knew the wind could bend you, but I can't believe you broke.
Now the wind could never break me, only your false love.
Honey, I've been true, I swear by God above.
I thought you were a willow, but you never wept for me. You went roaming in the wildwood like a ship that roams the sea.
The willow tree is fickle and it weeps in the morning dew. My love is a pine tree, and that's the only tree that's true.
Hey folks, we're back here on Talk of Southeast Alaska, and we are joined by Joel Jackson. Hi there, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Haha, we have figured out all the technology. Welcome to Talk of Southeast Alaska. You are the tribal president for the Organized Village of Cake, is that correct?
Yes.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Where does the OVK stand on the roadless rule, and what other tribal organizations in Southeast, you've done some organizing around them, what do they say as well?
Okay, well, OVK's stance has always been to leave the roadless rule in place. A little history on that. Back in 2001, we were part of the litigation against keeping the roadless keeping the roadless rule in place, along with numerous other groups. Mm-hmm. And it was ruled in our favor back then, as well as the other groups. But ever since then, the state of Alaska has been petitioning to open up the Tungus. So that's just a little, clip of what we're dealing with here.
That's right.
As far as other tribes, I can only speak for OVK.
Okay. Well,
we did organize other tribes to sign on to different letters, opposing the full exemption. So, that's all I can say about it. I can't speak, and I don't want to say anything other than for OVK. But we did have other tribes sign on.
And OVK has been a contributing agency, a cooperating agency with the U.S. Forest Service in looking at changes to the roadless rule. Is that accurate? I did some research, but I'm also, I'm glad to have you here so that you can speak to what you've been doing over the many years.
Well, this started back in 2018, the fall of 2018, when we got a visit from the Forest Service and an economic development person from the state, and that's when we got a hint of what was coming. And then last year, we got a invitation to be part of a cooperating agency group with the Forest Service on the Tungus roadless rule. Mm-hmm. And we joined along with five other tribes. And we had about four meetings total. Mm-hmm. And then the last meeting I attended, they told us, before that, I need to backtrack. Before that, we were sitting there, and my stance was always made clear to them. I was there only to see what was going on. Mm-hmm. My stance is, we didn't want the roadless rule lifted, but I didn't want to sit back and wait to see what the other tribes are doing. So I just joined the group mainly to watch and listen. Mm-hmm. And the other tribes were looking at it, you know, they had an open mind, you know, on the different alternatives. There's one, leave the roadless rule alone. Six was full exemption.
Oh, really?
And, yeah, and everything else in between was different stages of what the Forest Service was looking at doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, other tribes were looking at it, and, you know, and then the last meeting I attended with them up in Juneau, they kind of told us, you know, well, you know, the USDA is looking at full exemption.
So that was the last meeting.
That was the last meeting I attended with the Forest Service. You know, at that time, I decided that we weren't going to be part of that cooperating agency anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have some historical context around the impacts that logging has had in areas in and around Cake. Could you speak a little bit to that?
Yes. I'm actually a former road builder. Our local corporation decided to log way back. We decided, you know, that if anybody was going to do the work, then we better get on the ball and learn how to do that. And back then, I was concentrated mainly on making a living and not worrying about anything else. We went ahead and we logged almost 25 years, I think it was.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And, you know, I worked all those years building road. And, you know, it's, well, make a long story short, after we're all done, you know, the timber prices dropped out and everything. So, you know, our local corporation and Sea Alaska Corporation decided to stop logging.
Mm-hmm.
And after that time, I had time to breathe, you know. Like I said, I was just concentrating on making a living and doing what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But after it was all over, I looked back. I was out on the water one day, and I looked at our land, and I just said, what the hell did we just do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I talked to other people, and they had the same reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were so focused on making a living and not really worrying about what we're doing to our lands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was sad after we're done. And I've talked to other people that have been loggers, you know, all over the Southeast, and their reaction was the same.
So you've seen sort of firsthand the impact that logging would have. What do you think the impacts of a full exemption would look like?
Well, you know, I've been told it wouldn't be much different than what's going on now. But my concern is, you know, I know the impacts it has on streams and the animals and, you know, especially their way of logging is, which is clear-cut logging. And, you know, and big sales.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen the impacts of that on the animals, like I say, the deer, moose, bear.
Mm-hmm.
They have to move away in order to, you know, keep protected underneath the other old growth trees.
Mm-hmm.
And the water, you know, they say, oh, well, you leave a buffer zone between the streams and, you know, the logging. But we did the same thing when we logged here. And I'll tell you, I grew up on the streams here.
Mm-hmm.
As a little boy, we went down to the streams and we fished, you know, even when our parents would get mad at us, we were fishing down there. you know, that's what we did. Mm-hmm. And so I got firsthand experience on how those streams were affected. You know, when it would rain, before logging, the streams would raise gradually. You know,
mm-hmm.
they would get higher, but you know, it would be gradual.
Right.
And then after logging, it would rain, and that stream would almost get to flood stage in a hurry,
mm-hmm.
in a real fast. And then when it would stop, it would be, you know, back down to a stream that you could almost step across.
Mm-hmm. So very fast. It wasn't quite the way it was before.
No.
And I know that for me, it brings up a concern that I've heard a few times in the discussions around the roadless rule around sustenance and lifestyles that include traditional hunting and fishing. What do you think those impacts would look like if there was an exemption?
Well, just like I stated, you know, it's going to affect the animals, the deer and the moose and the bears, which, you know, our people traditionally hunt.
Mm-hmm.
And as well as, like I told you about the streams, you know, my fear is that, you know, the other streams that they log around will be the same as what happened here. You know, and the salmon right now, as everybody knows, is struggling.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, the numbers are down.
Right.
And there's a lot of other contributing factors to that, but, you know, we need to keep our streams pristine. We need to keep the logging away from them.
Mm-hmm. Well, we just have a few more minutes in the program, and I wish we had a little more time. I have a lot of questions, but I wanted to ask if there was anything you wanted to leave in, you know, as we exit, to the listeners, what's something that you would like them to know?
Well, I'd like them to know that, you know, we're not against logging or anything. We're just against this big mega sales that the Forest Service puts on and the clear cutting. You know, we know people have to make a living, but, you know, do it sensibly. Smaller sales, and, you know, that'd be great. I mean, we've expressed this to the Forest Service, and I was listening to your other person online there
mm-hmm.
earlier, and he stated something about, you know, the roadless rule as is, you know, makes it hard for different things to happen. And I testified in front of that House of Natural Resources in Washington, D.C.,
mm-hmm.
and one of the people there said, well, ask the question of that same person that you're talking to earlier. How many, I think it was him, mm-hmm. how many projects have been denied since, you know, this roadless rule is in place? And they said zero.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, how many were applied for? And they said something like 57.
Mm.
And all those were, you know, okay. They were good to go.
Well,
it's important to know that the roadless rule, as is, allows for roads in between communities for power projects, for mining, mm-hmm. for recreation.
Mm-hmm.
All those things are allowable.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing it kind of cuts back on is the logging and the road building.
Right. Well, Joel, I'm so sorry to interrupt, but we're just about at time today. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm sorry to have to cut you off a little early, but thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for asking me, and I was hoping to have more time, and I listened to other people talk, and they had more time. So
we'll have to bring you back. Thank you so much, Joel. Thanks for listening to Talk of Southeast Alaska today. Our producer is Peter Vu. Thanks also to Belly Meat, who made our theme music. If you'd like to be a guest on our next show or have any ideas on topics you would like to hear discussed, contact me, Becky, by calling 747-5877. You can also follow along on our newsletter. Sign up for it on our website. Go to kcaw.org and find the button on the right side of the homepage. An archive of this program will also be available on our website.